are listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything.
At Radiotopia, we now have a select group of amazing supporters that help us make all our shows possible. If you would like to have your company or product sponsor this podcast, then get in touch. Drop a line to sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Thanks.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
This installment is called Utopia, Part 5.
In Copenhagen, there is a utopia called Christiana, a self-governing society whereby each and every individual holds themselves responsible over the well-being of the entire community. There is no mayor, nor elected leadership, or hierarchies of any kind in Christiana. It operates as a direct consensus-based democracy.
It's a village within a city, and it was an old navy yard that was squatted by hippies. They just kind of took this property from the state.
That's my Danish friend, Pike Malinowski. And Christiana is the first place he took me after he picked me up from the airport in Copenhagen.
Whenever I'm in Copenhagen and I have visitors from abroad, I always take them to Christiania because it's an important part of the city and an important part for me. In my life, I spent a lot of time there growing up. I went to high school right next to it. You know, I'd go in the lunch break sometimes and play pool in the bar there and smoke pot, you know, and come back to class kind of high. Not kind of high, but high.
Christiana's founders, the hippies who in 1971 took over this unused military area, wanted to create an experimental and alternative society. A society that was economically self-sustaining, thus the open-air pot market. Over the years, this drug trade has attracted attention from the police, who have regularly raided Christiana. But the people of Copenhagen have always taken to the streets to protect it. But there's just so much more to Christiana than the pot market.
You know, most tourists who come to Christiania, they just see the front of it. They just see the beginning of it, which is called Pusher Street. There are all these little stands where pushers are selling marijuana and hash. But most tourists only see the kind of the front of Christiania. So, and what they don't know is down behind in the back, there is this huge area, which is kind of like a park. There's a lot of trees and bushes and grass, and that's what's so exciting about it. It's a living place.
In 2012, a foundation set up by the people of Christiana purchased the village. They won their battle with the state. They're no longer squatters. The cops still sometimes raid Pusher Street, as cannabis is still illegal in Denmark. But today, Christiana is a legit utopia.
Obviously, we all fit into society and we're like normal human beings, but there is this sense of like just anarchy and like wildness that I don't see in my friends that grew up in the rest of Copenhagen.
That's Julie Guin-Vivesta. She was born and raised in the very area that Pike first brought me to.
It's called Norddysen, and it's like basically the countryside of Christiania.
Julie credits Christiana for giving her independence and a sense of hyper-empathy.
You talk to people that live in the same area as you in a different way than anyone else does, I think. And that's the really amazing thing about it, because you can't really have the prejudices that other people might have about their neighbors or just the people living 10 streets from them.
Julie was born in a house her parents built during the original occupation. And when she turned 16, she got to live on her own in a private circus wagon.
Skurvogn is the Danish word. It's like a wagon kind of like made of wood, but there's windows in it and you can sort of like live in it.
A circus wagon.
Well, that was like definitely the beginning of my life, it seemed like.
Christiana has very strict rules on who gets the right to live in a circus wagon or a house or an apartment. And your membership has to be voted on. There's no such thing as automatic citizenship, even if you're born in Christiana.
There's this joke in Denmark that is like the only way you can get into either Christiania or like the royal family is like you fuck your way in.
When Julie finished school, she had to give up her circus wagon. She didn't want to live with her parents, so she traveled to the U.S. And when her visa was up, she realized she had no home to come back to. So her mom stepped in. Her mom found a family friend whose son was moving out of his room in a shared apartment in downtown Christiana.
The deal was that I could have his room, and if he stayed with his girlfriend, I could like have it. But if he wanted to move out, like he should have it back. So that's how I got into the apartment I'm in now, thanks to my mother.
But this is not the way things are supposed to work in Christiana. As I said, these things are supposed to be decided by vote.
I mean, personally, I'm super happy that I got back there. But I mean, if it had to been done in the right Christiania way, like he should have moved out. There should have been a big meeting, like everyone should have been able to apply. Even you, Benjamin, should have been able to apply for that room.
It's not just moms who are lending a helping hand. Drug dealers are doing the same thing.
Because of the criminal market and the marijuana market that there is, and Christiania is still so famous for, there's also interests in getting other people in that are not necessarily your children. But, you know, it's really hard when you're a normal person with like empathy and like someone's like, yeah, but I'm just taking care of his room because he's in prison and he can't pay the bills and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, that sounds reasonable. But like all of a sudden, that person has been in jail for like 3 years and that person has moved in and their children and wife lives there. And you're like, so like this was never up for, you know, my friends to come and apply for living in this place, and you just sort of like took over. And I wonder, and then you get these nasty thoughts like, I wonder if a lot of money was involved or if you decided to pay up the debt of the guy that is in prison or whatever, because that is stuff that's actually happening in there.
Parents and prison-bound pot dealers might be subverting some of the official bylaws and procedures, but the main reason Christiana has a housing problem is a lack of housing. For most of its history, the government destroyed any new construction. Now, post-agreement, Christiana has the right to build, but only in some parts, definitely not in the countryside. In fact, the government wouldn't even sell them this area.
I mean, they're like extra crazy about that exact part. The problem is also that the most populated parts of Christiania, that's where you can build, but there's already a lot of houses. The places that are least populated, those are the ones that are restricted the most still by the government. Those are the ones that we rent from the government. We don't own them. Those are the ones that Christiania can't buy. So we can't decide ourselves completely what to do with them.
On a recent visit to Copenhagen, I went back to Christiana. I wanted to learn what happens to Utopia after going legit. I found another resident from the countryside, a guy named Sam. He invited me to visit his house on the very day it was going to be inspected by the government. Sam's house is one of the buildings the government refused to sell. And this would be only the second officially sanctioned renovation ever since the historic agreement of 2012.
Good. Hello. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going good. I put my bike over there. Is that?
Yeah, no worries.
Like Julie, Sam was born and raised in Christiana.
Red door with the green things. So I'm born in there. And both my kids are born downstairs.
Sam's mother was one of the early settlers. And his grandfather actually was stationed in the barracks before they were shut down in the late 60s, which makes Sam a rare third-generation Christianite.
My grandmother would kind of like say, oh, visit your grandfather. And she would come like bring him like lunchbox and flowers and stuff.
The house, way older.
Yeah.
an original defensive fortification.
So, this, the house is called Autogainer. It's from 1781.
Sam gave me a wheelbarrow tour.
As you can see, there's all the small windows there. Really tiny windows. On the inside, they kind of like expand on an angle so you could have like rifles. And then you got like the bigger windows with metal shutters where you had like the cannons. So these are like the cannon holes. And the cannons could fire out there and kind of get the Swedes, the pesky Swedes.
The gun portals don't let in a lot of light, which is why the living quarters have been constructed on the upper levels.
So now we're on the inside of it and you can see like how they arch inwards so you can kind of...
That's amazing.
Use a single shot musketeer.
So where would like the beds go?
They'll go in the upstairs.
Okay, this is the living room.
So this is going to be the living room. You come in, you take off your shoes.
So you can defend this place if it needs to be. Over the years, Sam's done a lot of work on this building, much of it with his own hands. Today, for the first time ever, government inspectors are going to judge his work.
Well, the better part of my life, which is 36 years, they had no intervention, no like control, and didn't do anything for this house. Whereabouts, we've like renovated 2/3 of the house and put in water, put in the electricity, and made sure they had sewer systems. So all of a sudden they come and say, like, oh, all right, we own this house. So it's a bit funny kind of saying, like, your house is finished.
This is a radical change from how things used to be. But Sam seems to have made peace with this new way of doing things.
It's a matter of perspective, because you could get bothered of, like, but you can also just go with the flow and like, compromise it.
Some more people showed up. Some men who worked on the house and a few official Christiana representatives.
Yeah, this is Gita.
Hi, Gita. Benjamin.
Hi.
And that's Alan.
Hey, Alan. Benjamin.
Yeah, I heard.
Alan was a carpenter and a neighbor of Sam's.
In Christiania, Alan Children's Meadow. Actually, that's my name here, because I live in the children's meadow.
Alan wasn't thrilled about the inspectors. He didn't like Sam's positive attitude either.
I live every day with the sheep, you know, and I work with it every day. So I'm even more adapted than you are, because you just sit here and hide up here and doing whatever you like to do.
I'm not hiding up here.
Yeah, you do.
I'm not hiding. Building my own house, man.
Yeah. Weeping your own ass. Call it whatever you want.
You guys are crying because I'm not there. Yeah. Wiping your ass.
No.
Sam, Alan, and the others laid out some food and bottles. The plan seemed to be to get the inspector drunk. And then they arrived.
So these are the officials.
They did not seem like unreasonable people.
Christiania is something very special in Denmark, and they live here, and we want them to continue living here. We own these houses, so our interest is to have a good collaborations with them, and we have certain things we want with these buildings because we own them. Every owner have some ideas about their buildings, and because they are preserved buildings, we have to take special care of them.
I tagged along for the inspection. They examined the flooring, the roof, and some of the window frames.
What are they talking about?
It's details. It's
a historical detail. It's an old-fashioned style, not very efficient, but respect the old traditions.
Alan didn't seem to like it when the inspector suggested the wood pieces run vertical rather than horizontal. And then they were done. Everyone seemed happy. The owners, Sam, everyone except Alan.
Before we made the agreement, they stopped all kind of maintenance with violence. They sent out the police and tearing things down. And then we have this 8 years of negotiation. And now, after 13 years, we are in this position where we have to apply and ask for everything. They don't want us to spread out on the land. They don't want us let us
evolve.
Act like free people, you know. They wanted to decide what's good or what's bad and what is nice and what is not nice.
Except what I just witnessed, though, didn't they? Isn't this them saying, yes, you're allowed to...
Yeah, but we do what they... That's because we done what they ask us to do. Then they are just happy, you know. And then we just, if you just ask and then
yeah, but you pointed out the vertical versus horizontal.
If that's where I can win, come on, it's like fucking shit, man. It's like nothing. It's like that's ridiculous. It's like crumbs for like instead of having a piece of bread.
The agreement of 2012 may have solved some of Christiana's legal problems, but for Alan, it also changed the fundamental identity of his utopia for the worse.
What changed is that we now we bought it, so now we have a contract. We are all kind of laws is like it's the same for us like for anybody else. Earlier we got a enormously support from the whole Denmark, but now we don't have it no more. It's gone because people don't support us no more, because now we are just like everybody else. We're just a community like everybody else community in the whole world. So we lost the whole moment of developing, showing new ways of living. I mean, for me, it's like a huge loss because we really lost the nice intention of trying to change the world. Now we just have to follow along, you know. I believe that the world needs change. We need to change the world because look at the environment and everything. And the thing is that we should contribute to these things and show the way to other people, because we have so many guests coming here and we should show them these things instead of showing them old historical house. I give a shit about the old historical. No, I like this story, but that's not what it's all about.
On the day I visited, I felt like I was witnessing a fight between two different schools of preservation. On the one hand, Alan wants to preserve his radical utopia, whereas the Danish government wants to preserve its Swede-stopping fortifications. But while you can respect the old ways of construction, the present moment might require a new way of doing utopia. At the very least, letting more people participate. When I began this miniseries, I donned a pair of utopian tinted glasses. The plan was to try and see the world as it should be, as it could be. But keeping these glasses on my face these past few months has turned out to be next to impossible. It's been maddening. All of my darkest fantasies are coming to life, but they all have this annoying rosy hue. So, the opportunity to see a musical based on one of the darkest dystopian books that I've ever read, The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, was a welcome respite. I read Parable of the Sower years ago, but it's a book that still gives me nightmares. There's something about this story, about this young girl, Lauren, that's always stuck with me. Perhaps it's the roving gang of pyromaniacs on drugs that kill her family and destroy her community. Or perhaps it's the hellish journey she takes across the failed landscape of future America. Or perhaps it's just Octavia Butler's prophetic sensibility. The whole thing starts off with talk about this new American president, this former TV guy who has this ridiculous slogan about making America great again.
They elect a new president in 2024, and he starts to talk about like wages and like what can you, like why do we have these kind of barbaric high, you know, minimum wages, and how can we lower them? And you also get like, it's a corporation, like a multinational corporation that comes in and buys up the town. We know that we have the capacity to make this happen.
That's Toshi Regan, the songwriter, performer, writer who had the vision for Parable of the Sower, musical. Toshi sits center stage for the entire performance. She guides us through the story with her guitar and commentary. She also makes a lot of references to the present and our current relationship with our friendly technological overlords who are turning us into serfs.
What Octavia is telling you in Parable is technology isn't meant for everybody. It is only going to be meant for a very specific class who can keep up with the economic push. And that is very few people. You know, this 1%, and then everybody else falls.
Don't let your baby go. Don't let your baby go to Oliver. Don't let your baby go. Don't let your baby go to Oliver. It's a company town for the big 2-5.
Toshi wrote a song about one of these company towns. In Parable of the Sower, Olivar is a place that guarantees you safety and convenience. All you have to do is sign over your life. Olivar is like a combo of WeWork plus WeLive plus electronic collars that kill you if you try to WeEscape. Like Parable of the Sower, Olivar Blues is not just a story about the future. It's also a story about the here and now. All of us could end up trapped in Olivar. But then something deep inside says this you can't trust, but you grab your
bag and you pick up your stuff. With Olivar Blues, I really wanted to show the story of how somebody in our time could end up in Olivar, and they're trying to, you know, deal with that. But before they got to Olivar, they were here in Brooklyn.
Way back there, way back then, 2015, in Brooklyn, when the police got crazy and the rents got high, we shouldn't have watched from a distance, cause that was our life. We were feeling pretty healthy, we were feeling the love. We had craft beer and we had good jobs, but we couldn't afford to buy a house. We started to think that maybe we should get out with the rents getting higher every day. It didn't make sense to try to keep the pace or the American dream. It took a wrong turn. They say, Bill, Bill, see how much you can.
Anybody who lives in Brooklyn and sees all these new buildings popping up with, like, that really can't access the communities that are here has got to be petrified. You know, I wanted those buildings. Could be an Olivar building one day.
You shake your head, you put your Amazon purchase groceries in your fridge, you listen to Pandora or Spotify, check your banking on the phone and click the right. Oh, the good, good days, how did it turn so soon? We thought we escaped, we thought we had room.
Every time I do it is different because every audience is different and every town is different. And sometimes I know something about the town I'm in, and I start talking about things. And, you know, you kind of can get into it with the audience, which is great.
When it was way more fun, way more fun, we used to see Big Lovely at Joe's Pub. That was the time to take it to the streets to define the line against a real enemy. The economic system that sucks you like a drug, imprisons people of color and says they're all thugs. And that's when we should have given two fucks, taken everything we had and tried our luck, save five. Fight, fight, strategize, stay together, equal rights. Say fight, fight, strategize, stay together, equal rights.
And so Olivar is a call to create the changes that you want. And I think they take that home with them and, you know, implement that energy into their daily lives.
They don't care if you're queer, they don't care if you're trans, they don't care if you're black. Just pick up those boxes, put them on your back.
Like I said, Parable is a dark, dark book. But for Toshi Regan, it's also a map. A map that Octavia Butler has given us to guide us out of this darkness. And you don't even need to wear utopian tinted glasses to follow this map.
It actually shows you these directions. The thing that saves us is going to be each other and our capacity to stand together and to be considerate people to each other and to be kind and of service to each other. Like, that will be our saving grace. That's the real map.
Don't let your baby go to Oliva. Don't let your baby go. Don't let your baby go to Oliva. Don't let your baby go. Don't let your baby go to Oliva.
You have been listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. This installment is called Utopia, Part 5.
This episode was produced by me, Benjamin Walker, and Andrew Calloway. Special thanks to Toshi Regan, Pike Malinowski, and everyone I met at Christiana, Sam, Julie, and Alan. So that's it for Utopia. Coming up next on The Theory of Everything, False Alarm. The Theory of Everything is a proud member of Radiotopia, home to some of the world's best podcasts. Find them all at radiotopia.fm.
Hi, I'm Lindsey Graham, the host of Wondery's American History Tellers. In our latest series, we explore the emergence of a covert network of secret routes and safe houses known as the Underground Railroad, which worked to shepherd fugitive slaves to freedom in the decades before the Civil War. Listen to American History Tellers on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radiotopia.